Hello and welcome to We Are Liverpool, a brand new official podcast from LFC, where every fortnight myself, Peter McDowell and Robbie Fowler will be joined by a member of the first team and club icons to discuss their careers on the pitch and their lives off it. You can follow us on Apple, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts to make sure you don't miss an episode when they drop. And you can, of course, watch all of our shows on YouTube as well. We're kicking off our new series with a man who has come to be a standard bearer upon which the club's recent success has been built, Liverpool's number seven, James Milner. He was on fine form, and in the time that we've done the interviews with him at Liverpool, I think it's fair to say you'll have not heard him as candid as he is on this one. Here's a taste of what to expect in today's show.
I tried to look at every single player and try to take the best bits of their game. 17th birthday, my gear all got cut up, my trackie and my shoes and stuff.
I remember he probably done you a favour, to be fair.
He's like booted this platter of sandwiches in Midler and it's just gone up in the air and landed all over Brian Kidd. When I signed, there was still a massive hangover the year we nearly won the league. So many times it came up and I think that was a big problem. What's your biggest regrets or lows in your career? And I'd probably say and not celebrating the league title with Liverpool.
You still hurt that?
Yeah, it does. 100%.
All of that, lots more to come shortly. But before we dive in, just a quick message to tell you about the LFC Store app. It's available to download on Apple and Android now. It's the best place to hear about new merchandise and offers that they have in store. And there's also plenty of exclusive discounts available for app users as well. And as a We Are Liverpool listener, if you download the app and use the code WEARLIVERPOOL, all one word, WEARLIVERPOOL, before the 1st of February, you get 20% off in the store app. Terms and conditions apply as ever. Visit liverpoolfc.com/store for details. But for now, let's listen to what happened when we met James Milner.
Millie, welcome. The name of the podcast is We Are Liverpool. But one of the questions that we always ask is, what is Liverpool to you?
I think you have an idea of Liverpool before you come here as a club, and you know it's big, but then you might go on your first pre-season tour and you travel and you see the amount of fans, or you walked through Melwood as it was at that time and you see the teams and the history and the trophies won and the decades and the trophy on his wall and how many trophies have been won. That's when you start, you know, getting a feeling for how big it is. And you look at, like, obviously, I'm lucky enough to have worn the number seven shirt for this long. You look at the players who've worn that and what a massive number is, and the players who've worn it before, and it's just like the size and the success and what's demanded, you know, and the expectation every time you step out. And, you know, then we've been lucky enough to have a couple of parades through the city, and, you know, it's mind-blowing.
One of the things that sticks in my mind the most of all of the parades was just the amount of times you kept on saying, what a city. You know, the last one, and obviously you were disappointed with what didn't happen a couple of days before, but were you even blown away then, having known what you did about Liverpool, that they still were able to produce something like that for you?
Yeah, I think, you know, you used to probably see reactions from the city like that, I suppose. So it wasn't as much a surprise, you know. You know, I think some people obviously doubted, but you knew what the fans are like. I think it was more, you know, you're starting off early on, and like you said, what didn't happen, winning the two last trophies, you know, you might lock eyes with someone there and you feel like you've let the fans down. You know, you've gone there, you've tried to win the Prem, you've tried to win the Champions League and fallen short, and they've coming out and giving you that support. And it's important we did it regardless, because, you know, we had to make that decision before we knew as well, but to thank the fans as well, you know, the amount of money spent travelling round, the support they're giving us, going all over Europe. We won the title after so long being desperate to do it and couldn't celebrate together. It's important that we did it as a thank you to them as much as the other way around. But, you know, you, like I say, you feel like you've let them down as well, because, you know, we hadn't delivered on the last two trophies. But, you know, then you get into it, and it was needed, I think, on both sides. Like I say, we hadn't managed to celebrate the league title, but yeah, it was incredible scenes, wasn't it? And yeah, the atmosphere and it was needed for the boys to pick me up as well, I think, I'm sure.
Give us a nugget that no one will know about you.
I would say, well, probably most recently just started learning the piano, probably around Christmas time last year, so that's probably not many people know that. I'm not very good. Not yet. I'm trying. I've got a few songs in me and stuff like that. But yeah.
What are we up to with Vinny? Still playing chopsticks like me, or
no?
Really. I can do row 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 your boat.
Yeah, I got a bit of Adele and a Backstreet Boys one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which one?
Shape
of My Heart. Oh,
that's that one. Yeah.
Like that so one.
You could do the vocals. Yeah.
Wasn't
yeah, yeah. The vocals. Yeah.
You can sing it.
We'll film it at some point. Yeah.
I'm just looking through some of your honours as well. You include the Intertoto Cup at Newcastle as one of the major trophy wins. That makes it 15 instead of 14.
Right. Well, yeah, it's nice to be in there. I won't say it's the major ones, but yeah, I'll take it.
I'm just wondering whether chairman of the fines committee is up there as one of the best positions you've held alongside all those trophies.
No, it's one of the biggest pains in the ass. I think, yeah, you know, the boys see you coming and straight away they stop doing what they should be. It's quite funny, actually, because on a... Where we stay before home games, I'll have rice pudding before most games, and the jam they keep, I have jam with it, and obviously boring, nothing exotic, and you got to walk to the far side of the room, so I've got to pass all the tables, and no one's allowed the phones at dinner, so okay. I've got that walk across, so it's always good to have and just see someone's head down and just lean your head over and see someone's phone on the lap. It's like, sorry mate, and like surprised that I moved the jam closer. Yeah,
what's the going rate for a phone?
500.
Yeah,
because it's not like one, like if you're late and you get caught in traffic, that's not it's your fault, you should leave early, but that can happen, whereas your phone, you know you shouldn't have it. Yeah. But you're just disregarding the rule. So
I'm assuming you've never ever been fined, because you can't find yourself, can
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I have had to a couple of times. Yeah,
you have to find yourself.
Yeah, we had one. I was like late for a meeting because I was in the gym doing an exercise, and the guy
said, I love that.
Yeah, so I actually knew I was going to be late. It's like, what do I finish the exercise or do it? So yeah, that was one. And then I think my phone might have Siri'd or something and dinner or something like that. But we had a funny one the other day, actually, where Stefan left his phone on the bus, and Nat Phillips brought it off, and he pulled me at dinner. He's like, get on this, like, I've set an alarm every 5 minutes to go off during dinner. So the first one goes off, and I said, are you joking, you? 17 years old, your phone's going off. Like, everyone's kicking off. Anyway, got it on the watch, like, next one's going off in another 5 seconds, went off again, and he's like, no, he starts pointing fingers, like, panicking, like, anything. It was quite funny, it just kept going off. So he caught on after the second one, but...
I think what would have been more funny, though, if you just took the money off him.
Well, yeah. Well, that's the thing, the young boys have got to be careful, so they get away with it a bit, because we can't do full fines, so we have to think of something else. But, you know, if you think of some of the things that you had... me doing and young boys doing, you know, making the teas and picking your slips off the floor and stuff like that.
You've been jailed for that now.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, just zinging wet slips at me after he's had a shower and stuff. Pick them up, maybe. So, yeah.
Are you a believer that on time is late as well? Because we had Robbo on, and he was saying that there's a big divide in the team as to whether
we have this conversation all the time. They say if it's 5 o'clock and you arrive at 5 o'clock, you're on time, but you're not. It's like three. If it's 5 o'clock, you're 3 seconds past five or 10 seconds past five. That's
I mean, I get that, but I mean, that's harsh, to be fair.
Well, is it harsh?
Yes, I mean, there's harsh fines and there's harsh fines. If say you 5 o'clock and you come in, you're rocking a five. I mean,
what, five and zero, five, zero, five. Zero?
I mean, that's pedantic, that now.
But you need a cut off, don't you?
Well, why isn't a cut off like 5:01?
Well, because if the bus departs at 5 o'clock, it's departing at five, it's not departing at 5:01.
I'm not winning this one, am I?
You're not, because I'm at this argument.
Yeah, thousands of times. What is subtle in all of this, though, is it's standards, isn't it? It's about the little things making a big difference, do you think?
Yeah, it does, I think, and it goes back to respect to being a team and stuff like that. If someone's all late all the time, he's basically saying, you wait for me and we'll start the meeting when I'm good and ready. And it's not about that, it's about the collective and we have fun with it, and people late for treatment. It's same if you're late for treatment, the person who's treating you is sat there waiting. If you've got phones in the treatment room, lads are just sat on the phones instead of, like, if the masseur wants you to do something, physio wants you to do in a position and you're on your phone or something. So, and the biggest thing, like dinner, it's getting the boys to speak to each other. Everyone's there now. You'll go on a bus or you'll be anywhere and everyone's sat on the phones, and that's just the way it is in life. But, like, you have no phones at dinner. Everyone's talking to each other, joking around, and that's where you get your team spirit and that togetherness, because people are actually having fun and talking to each other.
Millie, you know, obviously you just spoke about Liverpool there, but can I take you full circle back to when it all started? So obviously you start off at Leeds, you made your debut at 16, wasn't it? I was lucky enough to be involved in that, mate. How did your career start at Leeds? So did you have a chance to go anywhere else, or was it always at Leeds?
I was playing for a local team in Leeds, and I got scouted by Everton.
Yeah,
I got scouted by Everton and got asked to go on a trial game, and it was just before Christmas time when I was 10, I think it was, and the game got called off because of snow, and never heard anything. And then Leeds come on 3 months later, February, March time, went there for a trial, and yeah, they signed me then, and I was there from 10 years old, so could have been
mad quick effect, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is that common knowledge? Would people know about that?
Probably not, no.
That might be a nugget.
You'd still turn them down, though, wouldn't you?
Well, at that point, like, I hadn't even thought about being a professional footballer. Like, I was 9, 10, just playing at school and playing thing, and like, until they rang, it was like, yeah, that's something you could do. Like, before that, I don't know why, or whether I was young, or whether I never thought I want to be a footballer here. And then at that point, that was the first point. Oh, actually, went to Leeds, and yeah, that was it. Then went through the academy there, and yeah.
So debut at 16, under Terry Venables?
Yeah.
What was that conversation?
I'd been in a few squads before that and not been on the bench. Wazza scored against us at Elland Road for Everton. And I remember sitting with Steve McGregor next at bench, and he was like, you know, you're desperate to get involved here, aren't you? And West Ham away, I think we were quite comfortable in the game. I think we were like 3-1 up, then it went 4-1, 4-2, 4-3. So at 4-1, I'm thinking, yeah, I'm definitely getting on here. And then got to 4-3, I'm like, I'm not sure, and he stuck me on anyway. And then Lee Bowyer gave me a pass in the midfield. I tried to pass him it back first time, miscued it straight to Di Canio, and he's run through and put it over at bar. And I just remember after the game, and Bo was like, bloody hell, do you have a bet on 4-all, geezer? that was it then, and managed to come in. And then we're saying a few games after that, I think I've been involved in a couple. We played Spurs away. That was quite a funny one, actually. And did you play that game? I don't know. We played White Hart Lane. And,
it depends if we won.
I think we got a result because I wasn't meant to travel.
Yeah,
I wasn't meant to travel, and he pulled me in and said, you haven't done that wrong, I just don't want to give you too much too soon. Trained with the lads before they travelled, someone got injured, travelled, wasn't on the bench. We didn't have 9, 10 subs then, did we? Like, a lot less. And then someone got injured in the warm-up and then got on the bench, come on. I think I set a chance up, I did all right, and that was me from then. But it was the game where our gaffer got an assist for their goal. I think he was giving instructions on. I remember all the boys talking about after the game on the bus, and obviously I'm a young lad, so I'm keeping my head down. But like, what about their goal, by the way? And the ball's come out, and gaffer's picked the ball up, and he's shouting instructions to someone, and rather than leaving the ball, he's giving it to them. They've taken a quick throw in down the line, scored a goal. Yeah. I just remember all the senior guys talking about afterwards. I was like, that's an early lesson learned.
I'm just thinking there of all the things you'd have seen in your career. You would have played in the game when you mentioned Bowyer there before, and Kieran Dyer were fighting in the game.
I was just about to come on, yeah.
It's mad, isn't it?
Yeah, I was just about to come off the bench, and then got sat down. We'd already had Stephen Taylor sent off, who got away with absolute murder, by the way. That was the routine where he pretended to be shot.
What's that game?
Yeah, so he's handballed it, gone down as if he's been hit in face, like leant backwards. I don't know how he didn't like rupture his spine or something. The angle he got himself into. Red card, walked off, and then obviously them two had a fight afterwards. So they've come in dressing room. Tails was in dressing room and said he thought like the game had finished, what's going on here? And I think they had a bit in the dressing room afterwards. And then, yeah, that was it. After Suey coming after and was like, I've never seen anything like that ever. Shearer coming and was going mad, saying, get them two so-and-sos up in front of press. And yeah, that was another learning curve very early in your career, all these things. And we had things going on at Leeds at the time, didn't we? And I had to grow up quick. But, you know, the senior guys at Leeds were brilliant with me when I come through.
You'd have still been part of that generation where if you won a game away from home, there'd be beers under the bus.
Yeah. Manager and captain got off and loaded up, and that was it.
Did you still love that, though, even though you weren't part of it? You obviously weren't a drinker.
I mean, at that point, I was probably keeping my head down. I think, obviously, the players we had, I remember having a Christmas do somewhere, and it was karaoke, and I had to go, and like, obviously, I didn't drink or anything, but like, I remember Kells saying, right, you're up next, and worst nightmare singing. Yeah. Like, I was keeping my head down and managed to get off, but it was. I feel very fortunate to have played in that, which was a different time, and now.
Yeah.
Very fortunate to have seen both.
What's the difference in terms of the dressing room? So, I mean, we were obviously brought up in, you know, characters. I don't know, characters are still involved in the game, but they're probably less so now, isn't it?
Yeah, I think now it's just different. Like, you still have, you know, Robbo, what he's like, he's a character. But then the banter was probably harsher. You were getting your gear cut up. You were getting like
moved. Yeah, I'm fining you for that. I mean, you can't use words like banter past 30. Come on. I'm going to tell Rob, or you should be like getting fined for that one.
Yeah, I mean, like 17th birthday, my gear all got cut up, my trackie and my shoes and stuff, and we were Scunthorpe away, and all my trackie and that.
I remember you probably done you a favour, to be fair.
It was a club tracksuit, that one, but yeah, you're right. Normally, yeah. But that was it. Head down, don't say anything, nothing to stick out, like basic car, basic tracksuit, nothing.
Just all to stay out of the way.
Speak when spoken to, do what's clean boots, do the help with getting cones in after training, just nothing to stand out or, you know, anyone to, because I remember like some of the young lads who didn't do what they should have done and like getting pelters and got put in a line. I thought, nah, I'm not having that. Keep your head down, don't be the centre of attention, and just, yeah, try pick your way through.
So that's obviously changed, hasn't it, the way the game is now. How has communication with players changed, both from a senior player's point of view and how maybe managers communicate with players? Is that night and day to when you first came?
Yeah, I think there's less teacups being thrown at walls and boots thrown around the dressing room and stuff. We had a few instances, I remember, at Leeds where that happened, and bats, I think, one time on it, and boots flying across changing room. And remember a plate of sandwiches being flung, I think that was when I was at City, actually, Mika Richards, like, there's a platter, and I think he'd been dug out for something. He's always digging me out, and he's like booted this platter of sandwiches in the middle, and it's just gone up in the air and landed all over Brian Kidd. It was just like so funny when you think about now, but at the time, no one wants to speak. But yeah, it has changed. I think, like I said, even with the young guys, you know, it was harsher then. You know, you would get walloped in training, you'd get certain things that happen if you didn't do what you should be doing and stuff. And now it's changed, like players are more sensitive and stuff, but it was the same back then. Like, you have to find what's best for a player. Some players respond well to a come on, get going, and like a bit of a rollicking, and other players need an arm round them and the supportive side, and it's just working out which players respond to, really.
Are you aware of that now, though? I know years ago that was the case in the game, but can you still have a go at players now? But have you still got to be careful how you...
Yeah, you got to be careful,
It's just different having goals, isn't it?
Yeah, I think... Yeah, it is. And people come from different countries and are brought up differently. And some things that, like, you know, you'd have shouted at me, I shout at you, or I shout at Hendo. If you said the same thing to other players, you're not meaning it in any disrespect or any way. It's just like to say, come on or whatever, but they'd find that really disrespectful. So you have to be aware of that as well. And that's part of it.
Is that just an unwritten rule still, where you can dig a player out on the pitch? There was one with Virgil, wasn't there, a couple of months ago, people made a lot of it. Is that just forgotten about straight away because no one's taking it personally?
There's football, and it things stay on the field. We're all there to be the best we can be, and we want to be pulled. I want Virgil to pull me, I want Hendo to pull me, and likewise, whether it's Harvey Elliott or whether it's Alisson or whoever, we're all trying to achieve the same thing, and you know, it's on the pitch, it's finished, and you know what the group's like. The group's incredible. Everyone's so comfortable. Like, you could pull two names out of a hat and have them have dinner together, and everyone will get on. And you always say that in interviews, like you say, but that's one of the things we're talking about before. You give the answer that you have to give, but this is like this dressing room. You don't have to. Everyone, unbelievable people. We've talked about the transfer policy and the do the homework and the characters they're bringing in, but everyone gets on so well. And you know, even like you see a relationship like Louis and Curtis, and like they don't even speak the same language, and like the jokes they're having and how they're getting on. It's like, how is that? How does that work? Like, because even if Louis spoke great English, he's not understanding Curtis.
Yeah.
Like, but yeah, it just works.
Just a quick message here to remind you that the LFC Store app users will get 20% off purchases when they use the code WEARELIVERPOOL, all one word, WEARELIVERPOOL, before February 1st. You can download the app on Apple or Android today. As ever, terms and conditions apply, so visit liverpoolfc.com store to read more about that. And we'll get back to the show.
Millie, if your career was to finish tomorrow, and I hope you've got a good few years left in you, you will be an absolute role model and a player that someone would always look up to. Who was you looking up to when you were a young kid?
I think Alan Smith was the one who, when I come through, because he did what we all wanted to do. You know, we were in the academy. He was a local lad. He'd scored his first touch at Anfield. You know, he showed us a pathway. He did what we were all striving to do. So it was him when I was coming through. And then after that, it wasn't one person. I tried to look at every single player and try to take the best bits of their game or see how they prepared or see what they did in their regime. And see would that work in mine and try add it in. I mean, you know, it develops as your career goes on. Like, I used to do shooting sessions after training every day pretty much until obviously you get to an age where then, you know, you can't be walloping balls every day. So then you go and do yoga. Like tonight, you go and do yoga at home and prepare for the next game, and that's something else you've added in. But like, I mean, shooting sessions at Leeds, and you've got like Rob, he's like scuffed 3 inch bottom corner, then he'd smash 7 inch top corner. It didn't matter how he hit it, it'd go in. You got Mark Vidouk, you got Alan Smith, you got Robbie Keane, like these players. And then you go to Newcastle and you're watching Shearer, Cliver. That's what you're learning. You're watching these guys. What are they doing on the pitch, but also off the pitch? How are they as good as they are? And I think that's the biggest thing. You would just watch and learn and see what, and then take the best bits. And because what works for, say, Rob wouldn't have worked for me or whatever, but you try stuff and you get advice from all these people, but then it's your decision. I'm going to do this. I'm going to go down this route.
Mm. I'm getting acute anxiety there because you've got a hot cup of tea and I'm worried it's going to go cold. Have a little slurp of it. And it is linked to the next question, Millie, because I just wonder what a cheat day looks like for you. Do you have them? Are you allowed to have them?
Yeah, I think it's important that, you know, if you just stay on the straight and narrow the whole time in terms of your diet and drinks, fluids and the right things is obviously incredibly important. But yeah, I think you need to have the odd dessert here and there, or the odd, there's a nice pizza place near us that does decent pizzas, like, which are good. And it's
what's
important.
What's the name of that?
you've probably got it already.
What is it?
900
degrees. The managers you've played under, and I'm going to miss a few out here, but I was just looking through some of the clubs there before, the likes of Terry Venables, Robbie's already mentioned, Sir Bobby Robson, Jürgen. Is the one that you particularly clicked with that you thought, just everything I'm about as a player? Miss the current manager out, I guess, because that probably goes par for the course.
I think, again, it's hard. Obviously, I've had some very, very good managers and some poor ones as well. And again, you try and take what you can from each one. And, you know, again, I've been very fortunate. You go, like you say, go back to Terry and Sir Bobby, and then, you know, someone like Martin O'Neill, who was like unbelievable. We didn't do too much shape and things like that. But he was unbelievable. My manager made you feel like the best player in the world and was unbelievable with that. Days off when we got chance, like, I'll see you Thursday, lads, great result. And if you're playing well, you get that off. And we were doing incredible at Village at that time. Yeah. And then you go to City and you have Mancini, who's like shape every day in the warm-up, mannequins out, and you're doing this. And it just shows you like there's so many different ways to manage a football club and be successful. It's nice that I've played under that such different people from different eras, and I'm lucky enough that I can think back, and again, you take bits what each one did well and think what worked and what didn't.
What works for you then? So, you know, we spoke before about certain players react from maybe having a go at, or you know, someone do a harm around the shoulder. What are you? Because I'm talking about obviously the man management. Now I was a player who reacted to good man managers. I think they were probably brought a little bit more out for you. Now you spoke about the managers, different aspects of how they, you know, arrange games or whatever. What was it about you?
I think, you know, I can take rollickings, and you know, I've had managers when I was a younger player, and I had a manager who rolled at me in front of everyone in the dressing room, and then apologised the next day and said it wasn't me. It's just because I know you can take it. And I was an easy target, really. He didn't want to pick out the bigger players in the team, but he apologised, but he wanted to make an example of someone, basically. So I think I've always been able to take that, and I'd always try and turn that around. If someone says something, you try and prove them wrong. But it is important that you hear the positive reinforcement as well. And, you know, sometimes it's like, oh, the good things are expected and the bad things aren't, so you don't get any praise at a certain level. But it's like, well, it's always nice to hear well done or well played, or you played well today. And I think that is important as well, because you know that's what you're doing every day. Everyone wants to hear that you're doing a good job. You don't need to hear it every day, and some players need to be reassured constantly, but every so often it is nice to obviously hear that.
You played in Jürgen's first game. I know the personnel's changed a lot since then, almost completely changed, hasn't it? But how's the dressing room changed, do you think, the mentality perhaps since then?
When I signed, I'd been on the right side of Pippin Liverpool to the title a couple of years before, and there was still a massive hangover. it was in loads of conversations every day. The year we nearly won the league, the year we nearly won the league. So many times it came up, and I think that was a big problem. And I think that was like still a hangover, and we were so close and didn't happen. And then obviously the new manager come in, and you know the dressing room changed a lot, and certain players and things like that. But he was very strong in that we have to make our own history here, because when you sign for Liverpool, like we talked about, it's such a massive club, and the history is incredible, and you're expected to win things. And but you know that should be used as like a boost. I'm playing for Liverpool. This is Liverpool. We are Liverpool. Use that as opposed to, like the manager said, carrying it around in a backpack as if you're playing with that weight on your shoulders that we can't live up to the people there before. And that was the biggest part of the journey at the start. We have to make our own history here. We have to be talking about this isn't a successful era that we've started and created together.
Is there a point at which you put your finger on things then and thought, things are changing here? The pace was fairly quick, wasn't it? You got to cup finals and never won them. I just wonder whether sometimes when you don't win a trophy, can that be the moment where it clicks and you think, I don't want to go through this again?
Yeah, I think, like I say, we did get to cup finals without... I mean, it clicked quite quick. How I remember the journey, sort of, we got to a place where we could beat anyone on our day, but then literally the next week we could play and we'd be absolutely horrendous, and there was just no consistency. And then that developed and we got to a point where we were consistent, and then getting to finals but not getting over the line, and then you get that first one and it's like, bang, now we've won something together. Because as a team, you know, you can bring successful players and who have won things all over, but until you've won it as a collective, you know, it helps having people have won, but when you win it together, that's massive, and it gives you that belief straight away.
I think one of the turning points, I think, from a club point of view, was losing the Europa League final to Sevilla. I remember being in the function after the game, and everyone was just like sat around, and it was a real horrible atmosphere, because obviously you just lost the final, and you know, you're trying to progress to that different level. And Jürgen, he got on the mic and he spoke for about 5 minutes, and after he finished that speech, I honestly believed that we won that Europa League.
Yeah,
that's probably the best trophy I've won that. Honestly,
I remember it,
massive turning point in the club.
Yeah, though. I think obviously a few people had a few drinks drowned, and Sorrows just sat there sad, and he spoke, and he wanted to get us up and sing We Are Liverpool. I was like, there's no chance I'm singing that, gaffer. And he come over a second time, and I think third time he come over, he's like, I'm your effing manager, get up, and we're doing this. And like, we all got up and sang We Are Liverpool together, and you know, it's the last thing you want to be doing. But I ain't had any alcohol, do you know what I mean? Yeah. But like, he's right, what he said and that togetherness, and that's the first step of bouncing back and going on.
That command he's got over a room, I mean, seconds after he'd given the speech, he demanded everyone had a dance off. He's got that flip, hasn't he, that he just commands so much attention in a room, and you'll have seen it so many times at half time where he's changed completely the thread of the game for you to go on and win a game in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, he's got that personality on him, and he's I think his first year we lost to Watford away 3-0, and it was the night of the Christmas party, and he was like, one thing you need to learn about what we do here: when we train 100%, when we play 100%, and when we party, whether we've lost 3-0 or not, we party 100%. And that was it. We do this is for tonight, for the Melwood staff, you know. Yeah, we've lost a game, but tonight we can't do anything about that. This is the night for them. They work hard for us. And he's got a great way of knowing what people are thinking, knowing what influences around the game, what might have been said, whether people have been on social media, or you know, people might be thinking certain things, or we've had a game 48 hours before and travelled back, and it's like, nah, that's not an excuse. This isn't a reason, and like nipping things in the bud before you go into the game, so there's no doubts. He's very good at reading that, what might stop you from doing something, he'll nip it in the bud before it even becomes an issue.
Are you getting better as your career progresses at enjoying the moments? Because the games come so thick and fast. You have such a little window of time to enjoy things. But when you go on, your career is going to go like that, isn't it? Are you getting better at that then?
Yes and no, I think. I think it's very hard sometimes, obviously, when you win a trophy in a club like Liverpool, it's right, the next one. And like obviously the two we won last year, you're in the middle of the season, so you can't enjoy that, and then you're trying to get to the last game of the season, and then when you win a league title, you maybe have 3 weeks off, and then you can't even talk or think about that. It's the next season that's gone. So that's probably one regret as a player. You don't get to enjoy the highs as much as you should, because it's always the next one. But yeah, with that, like when we won the title and we were at the hotel and watching the Chelsea game, I was at the back of the room just watching everyone and the game, obviously, but could see the whole room and seeing people's reactions and the emotion, and that was nice. I wouldn't have done that before. I'd have been right in the mix.
Yeah.
But I watched the first half in the mix, and then after that moved to the back and you could see everyone else, and I suppose, yeah, that's it.
Like, is there a takeaway from that? Somebody you saw that night, you think, I'll remember that forever, a reaction on a certain player's face?
Not one, no. I think it was just everyone, the collective, everyone being there together, and, you know, obviously the heartache of not quite winning it before with such a points total, and then obviously COVID hitting and things like that, and is it going to happen, is it not? I think it was a great way to do it, and I've been fortunate enough to do it, you know, last kick of a season, but also doing it, what is it, the earliest but the latest, yeah, or whatever the stat is, and being together like that, I think, it was a great way to do it. And like you say, when you get older, you don't quite know when it might be your last game. So those atmospheres and stuff, you enjoy it for sure.
How was it, Millie, when obviously you win the league? You talked before about a couple of years ago, you nearly winning the league. I know obviously people at the club still spoke about that. But winning the Premier League and then not really getting the chance to celebrate it with the fans, I mean, that must have been a bit of a head wrecker, that.
Yeah, I had a question before, and it was doing like, what's your biggest regrets or lows in your career? And I'd probably say being relegated with Leeds was one, and not celebrating the league title with Liverpool the other.
It's crazy.
Does it still hurt that?
Yeah, it does, 100%. And that's why, obviously, that was so important, the parade. But you have, you know, how much everyone was buzzing. Obviously, we were in the Champions League, but everyone knew they wanted the league title, and, you know, how many league titles won before, and how long the Premier League been going never to do it. And Liverpool, every single season of a Premier League season, would have been one of the clubs you'd have said, at least as an outsider, they've got half a sniff to not do it. And that was obviously the dream, me coming here was, can you go and win a league title with Liverpool? That'd be unbelievable. So to do it and then not be able, how much the fans wanted it and not be able to be together. And then the first game of the next season was Liverpool-Leeds. Leeds hadn't been in the Premier League for 17 years or something. Liverpool had just become league champions for the first time in however long. Can you imagine the atmosphere in that game?
Yeah.
And there's no one there.
The mindset's a big thing as well. I was looking a couple of days ago, obviously knew we were going to do you for the podcast, some of the interviews that you'd done over the years. And you'd done an interview just before the second leg of the Barcelona game. Now, we obviously played ever so well at the Nou Camp, and the scoreline flattered them. But what came across so clearly was how much you talked about Anfield and the character that we've got in the team. It almost felt like, not that you knew what the outcome was going to be, but you'd certainly not given up that was something that was, you know, concluded already. I wonder whether the year before, when they had this big lead against Roma, that they abandoned, played a part as well. What was your mindset going into that?
Yeah, I don't think I ever thought on their side, but they had, like you say, that never really came into me. I think special things happen at Anfield. I think from a personal point of view, the Dortmund game had a similar sort of feeling, I think, a few years before, didn't it? And a similar atmosphere and a similar sort of comeback and a special European night. The atmosphere could be created, you know, the city game a few years before, there was that the year before, wasn't it? And that sort of atmosphere. So, you know, special things can happen at Anfield. But I think, you know, the biggest thing about that whole emotional swing was, you know, being close the year before, then obviously the night before City play and Vinny slices one in, seen him hit so many times into the hedge in the training ground, and he puts it in the top bin, and it's like, we could be left with nothing here, having been so good, and this and that. So that was the fear, and there was never any panic. It was just like, it was so calm, thinking back now, like, you're coming day of the game, anyone want to say out? No, nothing. And I remember getting a corner the first minute of the game, I think it was, and the roar was ridiculous, like, have we scored here? And you don't often notice the atmosphere unless it's, you know, out of this world. And it was like a corner and the roar, and it was like, there was never any haste, we need to like go for it. It was like, get one, get like, just then we got the first goal quite early, and there was no hectic after that. We just plotted our way through the game and got the next one. And yeah, and then, like you say, from having that emotional swing of, we could be left with nothing, to here we go, it was, yeah, ridiculous.
The emotion on your face, because players often say, don't they, the overwhelming emotion at the end of games or end of a season is relief, it's nothing else. And you were emotional, we'd not really seen
it
like that before.
No, it was relief from still having a chance. It was, and I think when you're tired as well, it comes out, doesn't it? And obviously we'd worked so hard, and The relief of not having to play left back for another minute with Messi and people out on the pitch was probably, but it was yeah, it was a great night, and like moments that I've spoken about, and you know, obviously didn't. And the other thing you think about, like the players we had missing, that's credit to the coaching team and the players who come in, but how we train every day, and that's proving the pudding there, that you can miss those players still playing the same way, and everyone comes in and knows exactly what the job is, and to be able to beat a team, not any team, like a team of superstars with experience like that. Was
did that help you, the fact that you had players missing and you were so relaxed about going into the game? You know, if you had like a little bit of an inkling, maybe it was like a 2-0 or a 2-1, you're probably a bit more tense and apprehensive, but the fact is that no one really gave us a chance, did he? And the fact is that you're saying that there's players missing, did you just go into the game thinking, what if?
I think we're in between, you know. I don't think it was one of them, it's a 3-8, we'll give it a go and see what happens. I think there was like a calm belief. It wasn't like, this is more than likely not going to happen. I think it was a calm belief. No one really spoke about it, but think about now, it wasn't like, oh, it's a 3-8, we'll give it a go and hopefully it comes off. I don't think there was that feeling, no. I think it was, it was just, we're ready and we'll...
I'm not sure if obviously you can remember this, but what was the team talk?
I remember, I think he said, like, most teams in the world, it's pretty much impossible. Or it's pretty much impossible for everyone, but for us, it's not. I think it was that sort of thing. Like, anyone else wouldn't have a chance, but it's us. So,
love that.
Yeah.
I often wonder with players whether they get drawn into the same things as we do. Once, I think it was Divock Origi looking over his shoulder and seeing him playing Football Manager on his iPad on one of the pre-season tours. And you were into that at one stage as well. You played a bit of Football Manager.
Yeah, a long time ago, to be fair. I haven't played it for a while, but yeah, I think my biggest achievement was taking Geisley into the Premier League and Champions League. That was the best. I think it was loans. I had like 8,000 was my capacity, and it was just loans.
But you must have signed yourself.
Yeah, I was tried out, yeah, but no. I couldn't get. It was like young player loans, and I was too old at that point, obviously, for Geisley. But yeah, you always try and berate yourself when you want too much money. It's like, come on.
Yeah, what's he like? Are you good at relaxing then? Just switching off from footy?
I've got better. I think you need to be doing stuff. I think having kids helps. I think, you know, after a loss, it's the worst feeling in football, and, you know, your missus hates you for days because of how you are around the place. But when you have kids and they're happy to see you, that helps, I think. You know, golf and things like that, playing the piano, you're not thinking about too much. You're just trying to take your mind off stuff, and it's important. I mean, the intensity, the amount of games we have, like you couldn't stay switched on all the time, so it's important you find a way and what's right for you. Everyone's different. When you're traveling, you know, we'll play games or board games or cards, you know, on planes and stuff like that. And again, it's passing the time, but you're together, you're having a joke, and that bond and togetherness can only help you as a team.
That's what I was going to say there. So I think obviously being footballers, I think competition is vital. So whether it's, forget about playing, it's off field as well. So I mean, I see you getting off the bus with Endo or Robbo, and you're always looking at a phone. Is that that's got to be some sort of competition?
Yeah, tenables we play. And the game.
Is that where you got to get the
it's like a quiz show, yeah. There's the question, you got 10 answers that you have to give, and yeah, we've done it for years now, really. We used to play somewhere else, and it's just like competitive, get the juice going, stay better than falling asleep on the bus, you know, you're ready for the game, but like that right balance of being switched on but relaxed. Yeah, so yeah, we always do it, yeah.
You're talking there about the pressures of getting home when you've lost the game and the impact it has on the family, and you look around at the likes of Steven Gerrard, the opportunity to get to Villa, and it's a very short one. Does that play a part in your mindset then of planning what the next step might be? If I take defeat this hard as a player, imagine how difficult it would be as a manager.
Yeah, I think maybe not looking at myself, but I think looking at other managers, like you say, how short it can be. You see managers sign a new deal and then they get sacked within 4 or 5 weeks, and it's just like, you know, nobody really gets as much a chance as they should. If you think a manager takes over a club, they need a couple of years really to get their players in, get their style across, change the culture in the club, things like that. And, you know, teams don't have time to give that time at times. So it's tough. It's like asking a 14-year-old, what do you want to do when you're older? You don't know. You know, I'm doing my badges. You know, there's different avenues and stuff, but sometimes you think, you know, I've put my family through this long, you're missing things with the kids, you're missing taking them to school, you're missing them taking gymnastics or football or whatever it is. It's the same life again if you play, but then on the other hand, you're thinking, well, I've been so lucky to play with the players I've played with, the managers I've worked with, what I've learned, what I've experienced. if I walk away from football and don't give that back to other people, that's not right as well. So there's a lot of things to think about and take into consideration, really.
It's interesting that, Robin, you probably have it as well, but the dad guilt, we all find it in the jobs that we do as well, you know, committed to you know, covering what you do on the pitch, but you have that as well for the opportunities and the times you miss out on with your kids because of what you do.
Yeah, it's
I suppose it being a footballer, you sacrifice a lot. You know, there's a lot of things that go on behind the scenes that no one really knows about, and one of the big things is the family. I mean, there's probably many, many places that, you know, you should be going with the kids, but you can't go because of who you are, and it's a nightmare. But it's one of the sacrifices you've got to live with, haven't you?
Yeah, it's part of it, and there's ups and downs to everything, isn't there, I suppose. And there's things that my kids would have been able to do because I've played football. But yeah, they missed seeing you and they missed doing things, but then you get to go on a nice holiday, or they can do this and that and things like that. So it's a balance in it, and yeah, like I say, your kids are only young ones, so it is tough at times. And you know, they carry your name as well, so they're at school and straight away, if my lad's playing football, it's his son and things like, oh, your daughter, and you have a bad result and my daughter doesn't care, I'm daddy, do you know what I mean? But then she goes into school and someone's saying something about the result at the weekend, and it's tough for them. And that's the other thing, so you think, you know, they've have to deal with this stuff because of what you do and how you've had a poor performance at the weekend and it affects their life. It's not really fair, but
I find, you know, with football as well, and you know, when you first obviously get into the teams and you know, you're playing, and you're quite blasé about football, in all honesty. But the older you get, the more you appreciate the game.
What you mean, like how?
Yeah, I think when you first start, it's like, yeah, I'm playing football,
I'm just playing.
And you think, I don't know whether it's because you think it's going to last forever.
Yeah,
and
no, then I think it doesn't. Right,
but
yeah,
when you get older, and you realise you've got, again, no disrespect, but you've got a few years left. Then I think you start enjoying the game a little bit more. I think obviously injuries played a part with me as well. You appreciate the game. When you get older, you just know that you're going to miss it, you know, when it's gone.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you see the younger guys, and you know, in the dressing room, it's always the young guys in the dressing room who are doing like skills and kick-ups before you go out and stuff, or they'll come out and start knocking 25-yard passes and stuff like that. And when you get over 30, you're like, imagine getting out, and like Rob always used to do, Paul Robinson, he'd go out and just lash 40-yard balls straight away without a warm. I'm thinking, like, I'm lucky at that now, thinking my quad's going there if I do this without even a jog or something. And yeah, you just go out and you're just playing football, and you just think, yeah, it'll be there forever. So yeah, I think you are right there.
You know, my warm-ups when I first got on the team at Liverpool consisted of Steve McManaman crossing the ball and me doing diving headers into the cock. Genuinely, yeah. Right,
seeing that now.
Yeah. Just and I'm doing volleys and overhead kicks for a warm up. I've tried out past 25-30, and you're dislocating every bone in your body.
The manager often says that nothing would have been achieved in his 5 years if it hadn't been for James Milner. They go to you all the time for tone of voice. Would a parade be right this year? Would this be right this year? And obviously you do that in the senior players committee. You made a point of stopping outside Andrew Devine's house during the parade. That was something that was important to you and the players. Just talk us through that and how you were involved in that decision making process.
I think, like, we knew we were coming up to it, and the bus had been having problems anyway with the battery and things like that, and it was just a natural thing, really. And it sort of just happened. And you know, there's so many people around this football club, part of the history and things like that, and with great knowledge, and you know, we're learning all the time. You know, like I say, I've grown up a Leeds fan, and you know, I feel like Liverpool's a massive part of me now as well. But you know, there's so many things I don't know about the club, but you try and embrace it and try and represent the team and the shirt and the club as best you can, and help any way you can, and always try do right by the club.
Great.
I think when you're obviously, you know, talking about football, and you know, you talk about instances of obviously stopping off you know, Andrew's house, and you know, showing the trophy, you know, winning all the trophies. I mean, you mightn't like this, but you are an absolute Liverpool legend. How would you want to be remembered?
It's a tough one, that, I think. For me, I've always just wanted to contribute, and signing for Liverpool, like I say, that decision of leaving City was, you know, Liverpool, incredible history, hasn't been as successful as maybe they should have been over the recent times. Can you go and start another sort of successful period? And to be lucky enough to do what we've done, it is great. And I'd just like to be remembered as being part of that and contributing to the the team who managed to win this and be part of, you know, starting that sort of journey and the mindset and being one of those lucky ones who was in that dressing room on that journey.
Just one quick one on that. You've been associated with Liverpool now longer than any other club. Does that feel, does it feel weird? Does it feel completely natural now?
No, yeah, I think it is weird when you think, when you're thinking about retiring, because obviously players are seen as different, and you know, if ever you did an interview and stuff, it's like played this many games for this team or stuff like that. And it has been a long journey before I got to Liverpool, and obviously I was at Leeds from 10 to 18 and things like that. But yeah, Liverpool is seen as my club then, and you know, I do see Liverpool a lot in me. I think I said at the end last year, you know, like obviously I'll always be Leeds through and through and stuff like that, but I'd never thought I'd say that, you know, half of me is, at least half of me is red as well, yeah. Which is pretty ridiculous really to say. I wasn't allowed to wear red when I was growing up, obviously, because of Man United. But yeah, and that's what I think the club does to you. I think being part of that, being part of those special European nights, winning trophies, the parades, but also the people we have around the club, like, you struggle to find anyone who you wouldn't want to sit down and have a cup of tea with, wouldn't you? And that's special because it's the football club, but it's the people who make the football club within it, who have been here before you, but who are here now. And, you know, right from, you know, the dining room all the way through kit men and physios and you guys. And, you know, when you go on tour and you see the atmosphere there in pre-season, and, you know, when you have a night there where you can relax and everyone appreciates what each person does in there, area to make Liverpool the club it is. It's a special place to be.
I think that is why we are Liverpool.
Yeah. Well, listen, mate, it's been brilliant to have the opportunity to sit down with you, and long may it continue. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Yeah, hopefully we can have another one.
Cheers. Thank you so much for listening to today's show. We hope you've enjoyed it, and we certainly hope that you will come back. You won't have to wait long for our second episode. Just 2 weeks' time, and that will drop for you. Here's a taste of what to expect.
And when he picked the team, he'd pick Bruce in the five-a-side before Aldo. Aldo, Bruce wasn't the last pick. Aldo was. For Aldo. I mean, remember at halftime, sometimes running around would go, right, what's going wrong? What's going wrong? He goes, I know, but I'm not telling you. Work it out yourself. The team is the most important thing. I want to be remembered by the fans of being a member of a Liverpool team.
Remember to follow us. We Are Liverpool on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from. And you can watch us as well on YouTube. We hope to see you next time.